Welcome to the Deep Dive.
Glad to be here.
Today, we are going to try and tackle this pretty interesting legal question for all of you out there.
Okay.
And it basically comes down to this.
Right.
What happens when you have a tenant whose lease says that they can use the property as desired, but then they go ahead and sublease it to someone else without getting the landlord's written permission?
Interesting.
Does that kind of like as desired language mean that they can do whatever they want, even sublease? Or does the law, you know, step in and say, hold on a second, you need written permission for that?
Yeah, that's a really tricky situation because on the one hand, you have the lease agreement, which is a contract between two parties. And you would think that, you know, what they agree to should govern their relationship.
Right.
But then you also have the law, which sometimes can step in and impose additional requirements or limitations.
Exactly. And that's exactly what we're going to unpack today.
I'm excited.
You guys actually sent us this case. It's Nexon v. Haddock out of South Carolina. And it's a really cool example of how those two things contracts and state law can sometimes clash.
Absolutely. And Nexon, this case, really kind of gets to the heart of how courts have to figure out, you know, where that line is between respecting the freedom to contract and upholding the requirements of the law.
Totally. So let's start with the facts of the case, the backstory, and then we'll jump into the arguments and what the court decided.
Sounds good.
Okay, so back in 1996, a guy named David Nexon bought some property, some land, along the Black River in South Carolina.
Okay.
Now, this property already had some existing leases in place, including one for a guy named Kenneth McClary for Lot 2.
Gotcha.
And here's where things get a little sticky.
Okay.
McClary's lease said that he could use the property as desired, but it didn't say anything at all about subleasing.
Hmm. That's interesting.
Yeah, so like that as desired language, it's pretty broad, right?
It is, yeah.
So you could see how someone might think, well, hey, if I can use it however I want, maybe that includes letting someone else live there and pay me rent.
Right, right. That as desired clause really opens the door to a lot of interpretation. And the fact that the lease is silent on the specific issue of subleasing, that adds another layer of complexity.
Exactly. So fast forward a few years to 2000, and McClary decides to sublease his lot to a couple of folks, James Liffridge and Marion Driggers. And he did this without getting any written permission from Nexon, the new landlord.
Oh, okay.
And that right there is a problem, right?
Yeah.
Because South Carolina law is pretty clear on this point.
Oh, really?
Yeah. They have a law, Section 273560 of their code, which very specifically says that a tenant has to get written permission from the landlord to sublease.
So it sounds like that statute, that law, is really going to be central to how this whole case plays out.
It totally is.
It highlights, you know, a key principle in landlord-tenant law. Landlords, they have a legal right to have a say in who lives on their property, even if it's a subtenant. It's not just about the rent. It's about their right to control their property and who has possession of it.
Yeah, it makes sense. So, as you can imagine, Nexon was not thrilled when he found out about this unauthorized sublease.
Right, I wouldn't be either.
He filed a lawsuit to try and get the sublease declared invalid.
Makes sense.
And, of course, he pointed to that South Carolina law that we were just talking about. No written consent, no sublease.
Yeah.
The trial court actually agreed with him. They sided with Nexon and said, yep, the sublease is invalid.
Okay.
But Liffridge and Driggers, they didn't want to give up.
Okay.
They decided to appeal that decision. And their argument was basically, hey, look at the lease. It says as desired, which means McClary had the right to sublease even without written permission.
So they were basically saying that the broad language of the lease overrides the specific requirement of the law.
Exactly. And that's the key question here. Does a general statement like as desired in a lease agreement trump a very specific legal requirement, like the one in the South Carolina code?
That's the big question, isn't it? It's about figuring out how courts balance those two things, the intentions of the parties in a contract and the requirements that are set out in the law.
Right. Like, how much weight should be given to that as desired language when you have a law that specifically says you need written permission to sublease?
It's a classic legal dilemma. Freedom of contract versus the need for clarity and compliance with the law.
For sure. So to try and convince the appeals court, Liffridge and Driggers, they came up with some pretty interesting arguments.
Okay.
And the first one, as we've been talking about, was all about that as desired language.
Right.
They were basically saying, hey, as desired is super broad. It means McClary could do practically anything with the property, including subleasing it.
Interesting. So they were arguing that even though the lease didn't explicitly mention subleasing, The landlord had essentially given implied consent by using such general language.
Yeah, like, hey, we didn't say you couldn't sublease, so you must be able to.
Hmm.
Their second argument I thought was really clever.
Okay, what was that?
They brought in the original landlord, the one who owned the property before Nexum.
Oh, wow.
And he actually testified in court that he never intended to restrict McCleary's ability to sublease.
So they were trying to show that based on the original landlord's intention, subleasing was always on the table, even if it wasn't explicitly written in the lease.
Right. They were basically saying, hey, even the guy who wrote the lease didn't think subleasing was a problem.
It's a good strategy, trying to bring in the original intent of the parties involved. But as we'll see, courts tend to focus more on what the actual words of the contract say, rather than what someone might have been thinking when they wrote it years ago.
Yeah, because those thoughts, those intentions, they're not always super clear or easy to prove.
Right.
And their third argument was a little more direct. They said that the lease agreement itself, like the actual words in the document, should override the general state law. So they were emphasizing the primacy of the contract, the agreement between the two parties, over a general law that applies to everyone.
Yep.
They were basically saying this is a private agreement, and it should trump the general law.
It's a common argument in contract disputes.
It is. But, you know, the law doesn't always work that way.
Right.
Sometimes the law steps in and says, nope, even if you agree to something different, this is how it's got to be.
That's the idea of public policy, right? Sometimes there are certain things that the law considers so important that they can override the freedom of individuals to contract however they want.
Exactly. Now, Nexon's argument was a lot more straightforward.
Okay, I'm interested to hear this.
He basically said, hey, the South Carolina law is crystal clear. You need written consent to sublease, and McCleary didn't get it. End of story.
Hmm. Makes sense.
He was saying that the law trumps the lease no matter what.
Yeah. He's relying on the idea of statutory supremacy, that when you have a law that directly addresses a particular issue, it generally takes precedence over any conflicting provisions in a private agreement.
Makes sense.
So it was basically a battle of the lease versus the law.
It totally was. And in the end, the South Carolina Court of Appeals decided to go with the law.
Okay. So they sided with Nexon.
They did. They upheld the trial court's decision, which means the sublease between McCleary, Liefrage, and Driggers was officially declared invalid.
Interesting.
And here's where it gets really juicy for all of you legal eagles out there.
All right, lay it on me.
Let's break down exactly how the court arrived at their decision, their reasoning, because it tells us a lot about how courts interpret contracts and laws in these kinds of tricky situations.
I'm all ears. This is the kind of stuff that really helps us understand how the law works in practice.
So the first thing the court did was look at the actual wording of that South Carolina law.
Okay.
Remember, Section 273560. And it says, very plainly, that a tenant needs written permission from the landlord to sublease.
Right.
The court used what's called the plain meaning rule, which means they basically took the law at face value.
Okay.
They didn't try to read between the lines or find some hidden meaning.
The plain meaning rule is a big deal in legal interpretation.
It is.
It means that courts generally try to stick to the literal meaning of the words in a law unless those words are ambiguous or unclear.
Yeah.
And in this case, the law requiring written consent, it was pretty straightforward.
It was. And the court specifically addressed that whole as desired argument that Liefrage and Driggers were making.
Okay.
They said, look, as desired refers to how McCleary can use the property like building a house on it or whatever.
Right.
But it doesn't give him the right to decide who gets to possess the property.
Okay.
And subleasing, that's all about transferring possession to someone else.
That makes sense. They're distinguishing between how a tenant uses the property themselves and their ability to transfer that right of possession to another party.
Right. And the court made it crystal clear that subleasing is governed by the law, not by some vague language in the lease.
It's a good illustration of how a specific law can take precedence over general contractual language.
It is. And here's another interesting point. The court actually went so far as to call the sublease a nullity.
Hmm.
Legally speaking, that's like saying it never even existed as far as Nexon is concerned.
So they're basically saying that the sublease is completely void and unenforceable.
Exactly. But, and this is a, but the law has a kind of cool twist.
Yeah, okay.
It says that if a tenant does sublease without permission, any rent they collect from the subtenant, they have to hold that in trust for the landlord.
Oh, interesting.
So even though the sublease itself was no good, McCleary couldn't just keep the rent money he got from Liefrage and Driggers.
That's a clever provision.
Yeah.
It prevents tenants from profiting from an illegal sublease and protects the landlord's financial interests.
It does. So what can we learn from all of this? Well, for starters, this case shows us that state laws, they can be pretty powerful.
They can.
They can override what you might think are the terms of a lease agreement.
Absolutely. This case really emphasizes that point.
And for landlords out there, especially in South Carolina, but maybe in other states too, this case is a good reminder that you have a legal right to control who lives on your property.
It reinforces the importance of that written consent requirement for subleasing.
It does. Wow. And for tenants, this case is like a big warning sign.
It is.
Don't assume that just because your lease uses some general language about how you can use the property, that you can sublease it without permission.
Yeah. Don't rely on vague language or assumptions when it comes to something as important as subleasing. Always get that written consent from your landlord.
Always.
And for anyone who's studying law or just fascinated by how the legal system works, this case is a great example of how courts interpret statutes, how they balance the rules of contracts with the requirements of the law.
It really is.
Yeah.
And it shows how important it is to pay attention to both the contract itself and the relevant laws that might apply.
It's a lesson in legal due diligence. Always check for any laws that might impact your rights and obligations in a contract, especially when it comes to property and real estate.
Absolutely. Yeah. Because you never know when a seemingly simple phrase like as desired can lead to a big legal battle.
It's a reminder that clarity and specificity in contracts are crucial for preventing disputes and ensuring that everyone understands their rights and responsibilities.
So true. All right, that was our deep dive into Nexen v. Haddock. We hope you found it insightful, maybe even a little bit entertaining.
Definitely.
And as you continue your journey through the world of law, keep in mind this kind of push and pull between contracts and statutes.
It's a constant theme in the law.
It is.
Yeah.
Think about what other laws might impact contracts in different situations, like employment agreements or business deals.
Right. Because the law is everywhere, and it interacts with our lives in so many ways.
It does. And understanding those interactions is key to navigating the legal system effectively.
Absolutely.
Thanks for joining us on this deep dive.
It was my pleasure.
We'll catch you next time.
Sounds good.